Good afternoon. Let me put my headset on there. There, that's why it just sounded funny. Oh, good afternoon and welcome to We the People. We have one of those shows today. I was a little stumped on the music. Not sure what we're going to do for music with a topic about communism. So we have June with us today. She grew up in communist China. So we're not going to talk about what it might be like or what it could be like. Or if we just did communism better, how great it would be here. That kind of thing. We're not doing that. And the second hour, we have Nan Su with us, who is a reporter with the Epoch Times. And we're going to chat about forced organ harvesting, another benefit of communism. So you're going to get the whole picture today. I hope you stick with us for the full 2 hours. You can find everything about our program at wethepeopleradio.us. And we have all the archives dating back to October of 2010. Go figure. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And today our sponsor is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. They're up on Twin View Boulevard at 3119 and just south of Phil's Propeller. And their phone number is 226-9226. Or you can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com. Anything you need for tractors, go up and see them. They're very well versed and parts sales service. They do it all.
Mowers, utility vehicles, tractors.
Tractors.
Everything.
Yeah.
And they're all green and orange.
Come today.
You can't miss them.
And that's not all.
No, wait, not today. Today's Sunday.
Go tomorrow. Oh, yeah, that's right. Don't come today.
Don't delay, go tomorrow. Yeah, that kind of wrecks it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And thank you to all the individual people who sponsor the show. We really appreciate you. Because without you, obviously, we don't have a show. So happy to have anybody jump in at any time. Sponsorship-wise, there's information on the site. And topic-wise, we're always looking for your input. Actually, we had a screw-up with the archives last week, and I had a listener who let me know. By the way, I can't. Is there a reason I can't download? It's like, I don't know.
I forgot.
I was thinking, well, maybe it's your computer, right? I go there. It's like, it gives you this big page that said there's a security warning, blah, blah, blah. It was just a little change was made, and it was actually made more secure. But the computer doesn't know that, so all it tells you is, you know, your giant virus is coming to eat your computer. So for all of you who got the crazy warning, that's all gone. We fixed it. We actually lowered the security and solved the problem.
Yeah, so, I can even log on now.
Yeah, go make sense of that.
Yeah.
So thanks to Tony, who clued us in on that one. So always happy to hear from you. Don't assume we know everything, because, well, we don't. And I thought we made that perfectly clear. In our bumbling beginnings, I thought that was a dead giveaway.
I don't think you have to announce
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I thought that was a dead giveaway, but yeah. Maybe not. Okay, so that's all the housekeeping that I can think of. Have I missed anything? Anyone?
No,
anyone?
I think I think you got it all.
All right, so now we're going to go on a journey from communism. That's the important part. So she was there from communism, and I'm dying to hear the rest of the story. I heard June speak at an Eagle Forum event several months ago, and I think she only had 15 minutes. I was like, what? We should have been listening to this the whole day.
Now we are.
Super interesting story. So June is a former member of the Chinese Communist Party because she lived there as a child, grew up there. She shares her journey from indoctrination by the Chinese government to an unvarnished understanding of American freedom and liberty.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a trip. So,
yeah, you get to hear it firsthand here, folks.
So good afternoon, June.
Good afternoon, Aaron.
All right. So you've got Bill and I rapt attention, and we promise not to interrupt unless we have to take a break in 5 minutes. But except for that.
That's guaranteed.
It's all you.
All right. Thank you, Aaron and Bill. It's my pleasure to be here. So let me just get started. Just level set. You know, DNC chairman Tom Perez, everyone knows him. He calls the socialist candidate the future of Democratic Party. And I think since the 2016 Bernie Sanders campaign, more young Americans now have a positive view of socialism than they do of capitalism. But here's the little secret. I'm not sure if everyone knows that socialism is really the younger brother of communism. And China has always officially claimed to be a socialist country. So I was actually born and raised in China, the largest city over there. And as one of the elite students from a top university over there, I joined the Communist Party before I even graduated. The school wanted someone to fill the quota. I had this professor just chase after me every day because I was considered one of the elite, and he really wanted to recruit me to become to join the party. And I felt like, hey, you know, it wouldn't hurt because I wanted to use it to my advantage. And, you know, things went a certain way over there. So if you wanted to be successful, sometimes you really have to do things that, you know, view it as political. So I agree. And I felt like, hey, I always believed that communism is the savior of China. So why not?
And you were how old at that point?
I was the freshman of, back then, like 18.
Okay.
Yeah. And then so in my early 20s, after I graduated from the college over there, I really wanted to have a better career. And one way to do that is really to come to the United States. So it took me a year to prepare for everything and then applied for it legally and then came here to the United States. In order to assimilate to American culture, I really try hard to talk and act like American. In fact, I remind myself, every day. But I found that one thing really, really hard to do, almost impossible, was really to have my brain to process like American. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't think like American. And later I found that was because I had been indoctrinated by the propaganda from Beijing for so long, that I didn't even know how to think independently in this free country, you know, without the guidance of the propaganda from the government.
I imagine so, trust was kind of tough for you, just trusting the whole system after what you'd been taught.
You figured they were probably secretly, controlling you in some way.
Oh, yeah, that part as well, yeah. So, and then I have to explain why is that? I mean, people are like, you know, why are you guys are like robots? And then, you know, it's your brain process like the government wants you to. Well, in China, politics is a mandatory course that everyone has to study. Once you go to middle school, then you start that politics, the education. And it goes with you all the way to high school or college graduation. And even at workforce, periodically, you have to spend your Friday afternoon just to study the lectures from the latest lectures from the leaders, just to try to get up to speed on what's going on, the latest in the party, in the politics and everything. So that politics, that course that praises Marxism and all the iconic leaders of the Communist parties. And it teaches you its own version of the Communist Party history as well as the world history. So up to this day, you know, you may laugh, but I still remember some of the phrases that are recited over and over, such as I said earlier, that the Communist Party was the savior of China and that Dalai Lama was a terrorist and a separatist. And here's the interesting part, that all the people living in the Western world were all suffering, or in other words, in dire straits.
So when you came here and looked around, it's like, where are they hiding all the suffering, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, wow, everyone's great. I mean, where's this suffering? But the indoctrination is just so deeply ingrained. And it's just hard to, I guess over the course of time, it gradually kind of loosened up. But the core, the fundamental piece remained in there. And so I'd have to say that, it had a tight grip on me the first 10 years I lived here. I came to this country. I actually met a really good friend from Taiwan, just to give you a little bit of the, how silly I was back then. And so one day, I was stupid enough to decide to go into this serious debate with her over Taiwan's independence. I literally used all the words that I learned from years and years of my political education on her. And you can imagine how well that debate went. her face turned green, and she was so angry at me, she almost punched me in my face, I kid you not. But I was just like, what? You're just like a snowflake. You couldn't handle the truth. Come on, I'm telling you the truth, because this is 100% true. Because I learned how to recite that when I was a little kid. This has to be true. Taiwan has to be part of China. So, it's just, that's just to show you how silly I was the first 10 years I lived in this country.
Well,
Well,
I was going to say, when they told you, I mean, so what was the explanation for Taiwan not being part of China? Were they just crazy people who wandered away?
Yeah, well, they said the party leader escaped, right, after they lost a war here in mainland China, and they escaped there. But the reason they said was, hey, Taiwan has always been part of China, if you look at the history. So if we cannot separate Taiwan from the rest of the mainland China, it has always been, and it should be. And so that's the propaganda we're all, told.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. We're going to take a really quick break and celebrate some capitalism. Go figure, right?
Yeah.
Right here in our communism show.
Here we go.
You are listening to We the People. Join us in 2 minutes at wethepeopleradio.us.
Fitting.
Yeah. So for 20
plus years, you thought the world was one way.
Yes. Yes, and, very much so.
And we've seen, I mean, let's face it, you've lived here long enough now, our exposure to what really goes on in China is pretty limited. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I immediately think of all the little kids wearing the uniforms and speaking in unison and all of that. And that was you.
Yeah, that was me.
Is it weird now to look back on that and go, God, that was me?
Yes. Seems to me it's like, a century ago.
Yeah.
But hey, this is after you feel enlightened and you look back and, you just felt like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that.
But anyway.
That must have been a huge enlightenment.
Sorry, we don't want to blow your story. So, sorry, keep going.
No, I was going to say that that was me, if you believe it or not, the first 10 years I lived in this free country, I had the same mindset as about living in China. And I wasn't alone. There are millions of us who come to this country to pursue the American dream, but only at the surface level. Our minds are still heavily influenced by communist and socialist ideology.
Mm.
And I think you will tend to find that it's true. You go to Chinatown, you go to anywhere, the area is heavily, occupied by Chinese, and you look around, you ask, their views of China, their views of our American policies, you're gonna get a very different view.
Is it because they don't trust our system totally, or is it just because that's all they were taught? And that's all they know, and they don't want to lose that, or what is it?
It's a combination of indoctrination and also what I call it is the blindsided patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like, hey, China is on the rise, and I feel really proud to be Chinese, and hey, I want to defend the country.
Right.
And our system is awesome, only that's why we live in America. That's confusing.
And you have this freedom of speech to some extent.
was that bizarre when you came here? I mean,
that you could just say anything
kind of
or go anywhere.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. You know, before I came out, I actually worked for an American company for 2 years. And then that was the reason I wanted to come here. I didn't want to have curfew. I had curfew because my parents, like, you know, I'm the only child, and they wanted to, you know, really to protect me, so to speak. I wanted to have freedom. So that was like, hey, this is cool. I can drive. I can go anywhere I want. I can, you know, make friends. All that is awesome. But all the stuff that I told you earlier about, you know, the communism and the savior of China, that Taiwan should be part of China and all that stuff, and then to a certain extent, there's a capitalism, there's evil. It was still in me. It was like, you know, it was hard to remove that because before I came here, I had almost 10 years of that education. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't take overnight to erase that completely.
Sure. So what was the...
Yeah.
What was the, I don't know, did you have a turning point, or was it just after a while?
Yes. Huh? I know, right? People would ask me, so what happened to you?
Yeah,
right. Did something whack on your head, and then you were like, oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, so in January 2008, actually 10 years ago, that's interesting, being here for 20 years, and then my turning point exactly at the middle of that. I came across a performing arts group called Shenyun. You've probably seen it. It's spelled S-H-E-N-Y-U-N. I'm sure you've seen its ads from billboards or newspapers. It is a world-class nonprofit performing arts group based in New York, not from China. See, I didn't know that. Before I saw that show, I was pretty arrogant because I've been to symphonies in Vienna, operas in Italy, and musicals in Broadway. So I just felt like that was one of those shows. But that day, as I sat there to watch the show, I had tears streaming down my face. I was really shocked. I was shocked by the beauty of the show, and more importantly, the spirituality of the Chinese culture that I had long forgotten. What Shenyun presented on stage was so different from the party culture, that Communist Party culture that I grew up with. Let me give you you know, some example here. Those values like loyalty, compassion, filial piety, righteousness, selflessness, tolerance, and even reverence for heaven. You know, communism is atheism, and reverence for heaven was kind of new to me. So it was like rediscovering my own heritage and reconnecting to the traditional Chinese values and beliefs.
Reconnecting to your heritage, less the communism.
Yes. Less the communism, correct.
Right.
That my true heritage without any influence of communism. My heritage went back 5,000 years ago and has created some splendor in this entire history. And communism only took over China for the last probably 100 years. So that mm-hmm. does not represent the true heritage, the true Chinese culture. But I didn't know any better before I went to see the show because once we started going to school and then all we were fed was all those party propaganda, and even the culture, the history, everything was all filtered, was all you know, edited. So
a big part of that was rewriting the history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, interesting.
So. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
What
I have to say, yeah.
Oh no, I was just going to say, any particular historical things that after you started doing a little looking, it was like, wait a second. That's not how that worked.
Yes, there are a lot. But I have to say that you may find it interesting, but Aaron Dale, for the first time in my life, at that moment when I sat there in the theater, I truly felt it was an honor to be Chinese. Because, you know, before I was like, hey, I work for an American company, and now I came to the United States. I work for a high-tech company. You know, the copyright, the plagiarism, all that stuff, made me feel like I'm ashamed of claiming to be Chinese. You know, there are certain things that I say that I do not agree and that I don't mm-hmm. want to just volunteer to tell people that I'm Chinese. I'm ashamed of it. But that moment, I was like, I look around, I really wanted to tell everyone in the news that, do you know that I am Chinese? Do you know that my culture is part of that you're seeing right now on the stage? And, you know, I had that emotion. So it was fascinating to me myself. But I have to tell you that I was also shocked, not only by the beauty, but also by also the values and the traditional values and the belief, but also I was shocked because of the courage of this performing arts group. Because in addition to the grand display of the 5,000 years of Chinese civilization, there were a few dance snippets featuring what I call the modern-day heroes in face of persecution. And I didn't know anything about that persecution. I thought everything was perfect, fantastic, rosy, because, you know, that's what my government told me.
Mm-hmm.
So that day, after the show, as I walked out, I had this burning question of finding out who was lying and who was telling me the truth. It intrigued me to start my own research. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty interesting. So you started looking at the things that they portrayed and thought, wait a second.
Yes. So that was the tipping point, because before I wasn't interested in finding out the truth because I felt everything I knew was the truth. There was no point for me to do any research. But that show kind of intrigued me and say, wait a second. This is so beautiful, so pure, so, you know, so authentic. However, the message that they portray here about the modern day, you know, the struggle, everything, it's a bit contradictory to what my government has been all along telling me. So I really wanted to figure out.
Right. Now, if you had lived in China, first of all, you would probably never see that performance. And secondly, you couldn't have researched the truth living in China.
That's 100% correct, Bill, because two facts. A is because that show cannot go to China. Second of all is because the censorship in China. Even if you are interested, you're curious, because of the internet censorship, you won't be able to find out the truth. Right? So that is what we don't often realize is that, yes, you know, we have fake news and we have mass media bias here in this free country. But if you're willing to dig, you're still able to access abundant uncensored information on the internet.
Sure.
And that is one of the fundamental differences between this country and China.
Now, the internet isn't completely open in China? I mean, you can't...
No. This is why Facebook is not allowed.
Right.
This is why originally Google backed out of China, if you remember, a few years ago.
But now they're talking about, they're going to go back in and play by China's rules.
Right.
Which
really, means no one learns anything again.
Yeah, but that's okay with Google. Yeah, that's a shame. Because China, their written history goes back thousands of years. I mean, we look at the American history. Our history goes back, you know, 250, 300 years, and that's it. But the Chinese culture goes back thousands of years, and it's documented. So it wouldn't be hard to research that and find out who you really are.
The bad part is a lot of the history they don't want the actual people in China to know about.
No.
Good, bad, or indifferent.
Everything that you learn, everything you learn about a Chinese history back there is all just, you know, all biased or specially edited to advance the party's benefits and the agenda. There's nothing true about those history because they interpret it in a very different way. They look at it through the lens of class struggle. They criticize everything because they feel like it's A, they call it superstition, and then B, they call it, you know, hey, back then there was suppression, there was oppression because, you know, there's the emperor and there was the elite class and there was some, you know, the common class being ruled by those, and then therefore everything to them was all about class struggle, was all about the foundation of communism. So you won't be able to learn anything true about that because, you know, again, like I said earlier, about the splendor of the Chinese culture and history.
Right.
It very much like what I see right now in our schools. I mean, if we do not know our own history, the true history, how would you be able to discern?
Right. And the Chinese government at this point, you know, they've taken away all that struggle and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is fine now.
Yeah, so, man, look here. Hey, when we come back, I got to hear the story when you learned about what Tiananmen Square really was. Maybe you could tell us that, because that was a real eye-opener, and that's a point in history that really pretty much everyone should know the truth of. And I'm very interested for people to hear what you were actually told when you lived there. You're listening to We the People. Got to take a really quick break. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
That was just a dream.
That would be a good lead in for you.
Love that song.
I thought it might come in handy today. Okay, so Tiananmen Square, how old were you when that actually happened? And you lived in China, right?
Yeah, I was young. And then I have to say that, I was very, very upset back then because I couldn't join the students that really wanted to go. But it might be a good thing because now that I survived and I came out and I learned the truth and now I become the advocate of that. But what led to that was really my discovery of Tiananmen Square was because, you know, like I said earlier, I started doing research on communism. And I want to use an analogy. And you peel onions before. Everyone who's working in the kitchen have the experience of peeling an onion. But my, self-research on communism was a very painful multi-year process for me, and it was just like peeling an onion. But only in this case, I removed layers and layers of lies. And each time when it happened, I felt devastated and, honestly speaking, betrayed. And in the end, I was able to reach the core, which was the nature of communism. And it can be described in two words, brutality and deceit. So I'm going to talk a little bit about brutality first, because it's easy, kind of easy for people to understand. According to the Black Book of Communism published by Harvard University Press, the estimated death toll from communism in the 20th century is about 100 million. Now, that includes 20 million from Russia, 65 million from China, 1 million from Vietnam, 2 million from North Korea, 2 million from Cambodia. I have to say that 2 million from Cambodia, that means 1 out of 4 Cambodians was killed during that time. And then 1 million from Eastern Europe, 1.7 million from Africa, 1.5 million from Afghanistan, and 150,000 from Latin America. Well, that totals 100 million. But many scholars believe that this is still an underestimate. The actual death toll should be close to 150 million. Take China, for instance. Many believe that it should be at least 80 million. Now, what does this number mean, the magnitude? It means more people died as a result of communism than World War I and World War II combined. In addition, it brought physical and spiritual suffering to even a greater number of people. So the hypothesis of heaven on earth dragged over 1 billion people into hell on earth.
Yeah, because that's really the whole thing is it's going to be great. The government's going to control everything. That way everybody will get what they need, and it's all going to be really super organized.
Nobody's going to be hungry. Everybody have a roof over their head.
It'll be terrific. Yeah. And then, unfortunately, 99.9% of the people have to live like serfs and have no rights.
And just to extend on nobody's going to be hungry, though, you know, the one effective way for them to kill so many people was through famine.
Exactly.
And then just to give an example here, in 1921, when a man-made famine struck Russia that killed between 5 to 10 million people, Lenin was overjoyed. He claimed that it would bring about the next step more rapidly and usher in socialism.
It's hard to wrap your mind around that a leader would stand behind famine as a way to control the people.
But it's hard to wrap your mind around the fact that people now living in a free country would think that looks like a terrific future. That's the truly bizarre part.
Well, I think today people look at socialism as, well, we could make it work because we would do it differently.
Yeah,
but
we're just going to do it different.
It always turns out the same.
Yeah, is there, okay, so you've done a lot of study on communism, lived in a communist country. Does it ever turn out different?
No. And then to your point, yes, people feel like they're so smart these days. They can do it differently.
Yeah.
Communism has been tried out over 100 years by so many different countries. It always, always led to destruction. Because there are flaws in the foundation of communism. In the end, it's going to become totalitarian, and there will be a few controlling the entire nation or the entire population.
And so China has been able to hang on to this form of government for, 100 years now? But the death toll has been astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
But look what happens. Okay, so you had the students at Tiananmen Square, which is a great example.
Yeah.
What happens if a group of people rise up and want to change the system or highlight the? I'm not an expert on that event, but what happens when they step up? And what did they tell you after all these people got?
They
killed?
Squash you, right? They squash you. But what they tell us is these are the national enemies. These are the people who try to. Separate China, who try to overturn the government. And in China, it's kind of interesting that the government in a country, those two concepts are like, they are if you do not love the government, that means you do not love the country.
Oh.
So they equate the government to the country. So if you dare to speak up, then you're a traitor.
Yeah, you're not patriotic if you go against the government.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the worst thing.
Yeah. That's why, my second discovery, of the communism, the nature of communism is really master of deceit. A common technique it uses is to give intentionally false or misleading information in a calculated way to deceive target audiences. When used effectively, it can alter a person's perception of reality and events. But just to give you a personal example, before 1949, the year that the Communist Party took over China, my mom's dad, who was a so-called capitalist because he had money and he had a manufacturing plant somewhere, he hired workers. He actually had an opportunity to flee to Taiwan. He even bought plane tickets. He changed his mind the last minute and had his oldest daughter destroy the tickets. Well, guess what? During Cultural Revolution, he and his family were kicked out of their mansion, humiliated in public, and denied their basic human rights. Now, on my dad's side, my grandpa used to be a doctor and the head of a military hospital. And unlike his colleagues who fled to Germany before 1949, he decided to stay out of his patriotism, just like my other grandpa.
Right.
Well, he died in prison 1 year before I was born. So now after listening to this, you will probably think, hey, you must hate communism. But if you remember the joke that I told you earlier about my, going to the debate with this friend from Taiwan, that wasn't the case. Never did I have any doubts that without communism, there will be no new China.
Mm-hmm.
So I am a total complete product of their deceit.
Right.
Do you still find yourself kind of, do you still catch yourself? Thinking things and then going, oh, wait a minute, that's not actually real.
Yes. Trust me, Erin, it is hard. It is a process. And I'm still doing that from time to time. And then, so to go back to Tiananmen Square massacre, when did I find out about the truth? A few years ago.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
It wasn't even right away.
No. So last December, the British released newly declassified documents from then UK ambassador to China. The document reveals that at least 10,000 students were killed in Tiananmen Square massacre. It also provides horrific detail of the atrocity, such as wounded students were slaughtered as they begged for their lives. Human remains were hosed down a drain. And a mother was shot as she was trying to help her injured 3-year-old daughter. Now, all these, when I heard all those accounts, I couldn't tell you how emotional I was. And I couldn't tell you how emotional I was when just 2 years ago, before that, I saw this iconic picture of tankmen.
Right.
Remember that?
Sure, the man standing in front of the tank. Yeah.
Yes, courageously standing in front of a line of tanks. I came across a picture from the internet just 2 years ago. And at that moment, I just thought, I started bawling. I couldn't control myself. It was just, I wanted to cry. I wanted to cry out so hard because 30 years ago, while you and the rest of the world learned what was going on through the Western media, I was told by my government that the military troops were under attack. Pictures of a few dead bodies were enlarged, amplified, and broadcast by nationwide television around the clock. It was a classic example of using disinformation to make billions of Chinese believe there was no such thing as massacre. In fact, the government was portrayed as the victim. The military troops were heroes, and the students were violent killers.
It's all in your perspective. And when you lived there, you never questioned that, I'm sure.
Of course not. Of course not.
Because...
And so when I... Yeah. Because that was the only source of information that
sure.
you could get. And like I said, you know, a broadcast around the clock, through nationwide television. And then if you ask someone from mainland China these days, like my age or even younger, you ask them about Tiananmen Square Massacre, they will look at you and say, hey, that's all a conspiracy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah, you show it from one perspective. You don't allow any other ideas. And bottom line is, you can't rise up against the policies of the government because that your only choice is to rise up against the government, which means you've risen up against the country, which makes you bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty handy, actually. It's very tidy. Takes away all the debate. One last quick break here before the top of the hour. June, we'll be right back. We are discussing communism. If you haven't figured that out, you can find all of our information at wethepeopleradio.us.
About it on the radio. Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Dreams that you dream of, dreams really do come true. Ooh, someday you wish upon a star, wake up where the clouds are far behind. Be where trouble melts like lemon drops, high above the chimney top, that's where.
That's what happens when Bill tries to jump the gun. He chokes. He choked.
Well, I just have a hard time wrapping my mind around
all of it.
How so many people can be deceived for such a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it's
there's,
amazing.
But there's never an option. There's never a break. It isn't like you're only a communist when you're at school. This goes on at home and everywhere. This is 24/7.
From cradle to grave. That's
so
how I see it.
When people disappear or, you know, because I know the next hour we're going to talk about a lot of the truly unpleasant side of communism, besides the mind game, which, I don't know, it's hard to decide which is worse. But what happens when people disappear or have their organs harvested against their will?
You go against the government, you say something,
And then
what happens? Somebody just shows up at your door and they take you away?
Yeah, they take you away. They throw you into those jails or concentration camps, labor camps, whatever you call it, and they're all the same. And then because the local newspapers never report on that, you wouldn't know.
But, only I mean, those, let's just say it's your next-door neighbor. Don't you sort of notice they're missing?
Yeah, but guess what? After so many years of being ruled by communism, you kind of have already developed a fear. Right?
Oh.
So if you didn't go through the Cultural Revolution your parents went through, if you didn't go through all those sufferings, I mean, someone else, so your family or friends circles went through that, and you have already been trained to be really careful not to stick your neck out because, you know what's going to happen. You saw that before. So there's definitely a fear factor in that. And also, with the very powerful propaganda, then, you literally... There's no way out.
No.
And then that's how I, as I continue my research on communism, I really started having chills because I realized that not only communism is in those communist countries, but it has been silently infiltrating in the Western world.
Well, right now in our schools, in our colleges, in our some of our communities, socialism. Yeah. I mean, we just elected a socialist. Yeah. Senator, Congress lady, I don't know what she is.
Member of the House, yeah.
So she's a devout socialist, and now she is part of our government. And people think that's okay. I mean, there seems to be more and more people that, for whatever reason, seem to think that let's try the socialism one more time because we can do it better than anybody else. What would you say to those people? What would you tell them to look out for? Warn them.
I would say, go back to the history. And I would say that, go back to in 1963. Some of you have probably heard of this, Cleon Skelton's book, The Naked Communist. On January 10th, 1963, Congressman of Florida read a list of 45 communist goals into the congressional record. And that list was derived from Cleon Skelton's book, The Naked Communist, was originally published in 1958. Now, Skelton was a former FBI agent and later served as the chief of police for Salt Lake City. It was during this four-year service that he wrote his national bestseller, The Naked Communist. And I have to say that this guy had incredible inner knowledge of what was going on. He didn't make this up for, in this book, he laid out the entire agenda of communism for overthrowing the United States, and that was, again, written in 1958.
Wow.
So
I put in the 45 goals that you gave us, and some of them, it's like stuff you read, as you read down through the list, you go, okay,
and then you get to the one, continue discrediting American culture by degrading all forms of artistic expression. Mm-hmm. An American communist cell was told to eliminate all good sculpture from parks and buildings and substitute shapeless, awkward, and meaningless forms.
Wow. And it's that today.
You see these things and you're like, what the heck? How does that?
Yeah.
How can
exactly.
that be?
It slowly just weaves its way in.
Yeah. And so people ask me the question to say, okay, I can see all those stuff, infiltrate the press and do this and that. Get control of the political party. But why do they want to attack art? So if you go to the Communist Manifesto, it states that communism abolishes eternal truth. It abolishes all religion and all morality. You see, art and morality are interconnected. Fine art plays a guiding role with respect to our concepts in our society, influencing our aesthetic values, which are closely related to our moral foundation and standards. And this is why they want to do this.
Well, it also stomps out independence and creativity, and it stomps all that out.
Beauty, when you see things that are beautiful, you dream dreams. I mean, you want a better life. You
try to create that.
You think of all those things when you see these globs on some, city hall front lawn. You look at the glob and you think, huh. I mean that there's
I'm
no
so enlightened.
There's no inspiration coming from or like the sticks that are all going a different direction. I could think of about a million of them. It's like, what the heck?
I know.
I just thought that was fascinating. That actually is part. I was thrilled it actually meant something, because honestly, there's part of me that's like, I don't get it. I just don't get it. I want to get it, but I don't get it. Now that I get it, actually, I kind of wish I didn't. But
yeah. And I also want to call out the rule number 31. I think it's very important. It says that it belittle or forms American culture and discourage the teaching of American history on the ground that it was only a minor part of the big picture.
That's right. Get rid of all that stupid American history. It was a tiny blip in and look at, so get rid of statues that whether you like what the person did or dislike what the person did, they were part of American history, and it caused you to go learn a little bit. But let's get rid of all those reminders and sanitize all of that.
Yeah, and then, you know, learning American history is not just a process of understanding how our nation was established. It is also a process of understanding what kind of values the nation was built upon and what it takes to preserve those traditions.
Exactly.
So to me, forgetting history is the same as destroying tradition.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's the same thing with Chinese history. They've stomped that out, and don't look back there. That's meaningless. We'll teach you what's important. And you lose all that culture.
I thought 38 and 39 were pretty spooky, too. We're coming up at the top of the hour, but I didn't want to let it go by. Transfer some of the powers of arrest from police to social agencies. Treat all behavior problems as psychiatric disorders.
Yeah.
Hey, look at that. It's like, okay, that's totally...
Well, you're crazy, so we'll have to take care of you.
Yeah, that's totally coming.
And then look at number 40. Discredit the family as an institution. Encourage, you know...
Oh, yeah, promiscuity and easy divorce. Well, all you have to do, and there's one above it about television, you know, make everything pornography and obscenity and books and motion pictures. Well, I think we've actually can check that one off the list.
Mm-hmm.
Can't watch anything without, you know, I don't know how people with children even watch anything. I mean, I think you'd about have to just...
Yeah, turn off TV.
Yeah, about cut the cord off. June, we're going to be right back. We'll call Nansu on the break, and we'll be back with both of you at the top of the hour.
Great.
So, for folks listening in, we're here with June, and pretty soon we'll be here with Nansu. I think you'll love the second hour. Well, maybe not love it, but you'll sure be, you'll have your eyes open. How's that?
You'll vote socialism when it's all done.
Or not. You can join us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.